Hey friends, my name's Will.
And my name's Hannah.
And you're listening to the Spiritual Misfits podcast.
If you've ever found yourself on the fringes of Christian faith, this is a safe space for you.
Your questions, doubts, and hopes are all welcome here.
We're creating conversations, affirmations, meditations, and other resources to support you on your spiritual journey.
And let you know that even if you feel like a misfit, you don't have to feel alone. Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Spiritual Misfits podcast. This episode is the second half of one extended conversation I had with Andrew Dodd and Scott Higgins. If you haven't listened to the previous episode where Scott and Andrew shared their own journeys towards inclusive theology and the story of Hamilton Baptist Church, I strongly recommend you do so. But in case you don't, or if you need a recap anyway, here's an outline of the story so far. Scott Higgins wrote a paper back in the 90s, giving an overview of different Christian perspectives on sexuality. In many ways, this was the beginning for him of a process of coming to see theological diversity in this area. A few years down the track, he was asked to read a statement to his church affirming that Baptists hold to a traditional view of marriage. Scott couldn't bring himself to read it, but instead asked the church who would be interested in taking a few weeks to explore some diverse understandings of sexuality, marriage, and Christian ethics. Every hand went up. As the church began to have these conversations, a number of queer people were drawn to come along and ended up staying in the church. The combination of fresh theological framing alongside real and loved members of their community played a key role in what was then Edgeworth Baptist becoming LGBTQI affirming. While this was happening, there was also a conversation beginning with Hamilton Baptist Church, where Andrew Dodd was the pastor. This conversation was about these two churches merging. Now, this made sense for a lot of reasons. The Edgeworth had one non-negotiable. If the churches were going to merge, LGBTQI plus people needed to be fully included and embraced in the life of the new church. So the two churches went on a process together over around 12 months, testing the waters of their relationship, so to speak, before officially deciding to proceed with the merge. At this point, the vast majority of people were on board. This doesn't mean it was without cost or difficulty, and some people left, though this was generally done in a gracious way. At the end of the last episode, Andrew shared the story of their first service together as a new church, and the powerful moment when communion was served by a queer member of the congregation. What was powerful wasn't so much this person sharing out communion, it was the fact that it didn't matter that this was the person sharing out communion, because they were welcome as much as anyone else. So in this next part of the conversation, I talked to Andrew and Scott about what they learned from this overall journey and how it might inform other churches. Now there is another element of this story that's important. The change Andrew and Scott have led at Hamilton is not one that everyone is ready for. And in Andrew's words, Hamilton Baptist is now in a somewhat precarious position within the New South Wales Baptist Association. So we talk a little about change, disagreement, and how some of this sits within a larger system. This aspect of the conversation is not theoretical to Scott, Andrew, and even myself. It is playing out in real time. And in part, this is why I wanted to share this conversation with you. Maybe you're part of this tribe called Baptist. Maybe you've left it behind. Maybe you're part of a different denomination or organization. Whatever the case, I believe listening to Scott and Andrew share their thoughts around their journey may be an important step in helping each of us to see our context through a fresh lens. So here's the rest of our conversation. Every story is unique and nobody else is going to have the experience exactly of what you've just described. But talking about some of the things that you reflect back on that maybe for other churches that are somewhere on this journey, pastors that maybe somewhere on this journey, what are some of the things that they could learn from this? So we'll get into some more specifics, but for you, Scott, as you think back on that journey, what are some of the key things that you think are worthy of being shared and broadcast for other people that are somewhere on that road?
Yeah, I suppose the things I stick out to me are firstly, you have to, I think, work on cultivating a culture more generally that says we recognise there is diversity of belief on a whole bunch of things and perspectives, and finding a way to construct a faith and a spirituality that doesn't depend upon everybody having to be certain about the same thing. And that's I think, a long-term culture you build. Mm. But in terms of specifically, if you know, trying to put in questions like how inclusion of LGBTQI on the table, I'd say firstly, make sure that you give plenty of time. If this is not something you're going to resolve in a single sermon or a single sermon series or a single Bible study. And the process of coming to, conclusions, whatever they are, must involve hearing the stories of LGBTQI Christians. And now, might I say, and that may not be all in one sequence. So when we first grappled with these questions, we were talking about lesbian and gay relationships, really, it was focused around questions of homosexuality. It was a couple of years later, after the churches had merged, that somebody rang and wanted to know if they would be their family that had a transgender person would be welcomed. And I said, "Oh, we've never actually sat down and worked through the theology of that before, but one thing I know is you'll be absolutely embraced." And eventually, they came along and they were embraced. And we said, "Well, now that you're here, we better find something out about being transgender." So we had a weekend we set aside where we got a Anglican priest from Brisbane who's now in Sydney in a Uniting Church, but she and her partner came down and spent the weekend with us and just shared their experience. Jo is a transgender person and her partner Penny. So, and that was really powerful because it was their stories and then how they theologized about their story. So I think that sense of you've got to hear from the people who are impacted. It can't be about them. It's got to be listening to them and hearing with them. So that'd be the second thing. So give yourself plenty of time.
Could I just add in there, how do you have any thoughts or did you learn anything about doing that in a way that is really safe for LGBT people where they're not sort of feeling like it's a big court case about the validity of their existence?
Yeah, we did. I mean, I think that's part of the process. When we first started, and I think we've done the same thing at Hamilton since we've joined, is we've made clear that we're here to listen and learn. And that's the spirit in which things are taken. And while we've always encouraged people to ask questions openly, there have been times, I think, where you realise some questions may be problematic, so we may choose a different way to do that. So you might get people to write their questions down, and then they're posed by the person out the front. So I think there is a need to recognise that, you know, if somebody gets up and starts on a rant of why this is godless or whatever, they need to be shut down because people have got to be safe. Having said that, I think also we've just we've had very gracious people sharing with us who've actually said, "I'm prepared to hear people's objections and respond to them." Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not like you – I think – sorry, just elaborating on that. I think you need to be really careful in who you actually ask to speak and share because, you know, another one of the things that I didn't mention in that story for me of coming to terms with sexuality questions is I met so many people who they were just – they've just been destroyed by the churches they're in, and they're in really fragile places, not because of their sexuality but because of their churches, not saying there's no welcome for you, not only with us but with God. And so that you need to be careful who you ask, but there's some really great people that I know now and Andrew knows now that we've met along the way who, you know, can come and help congregations work through things like that. And on that, the third thing I'd say, so give it time, listen to people who've got a story to tell, and then make clear that this is, whenever we're engaging on this, this is about your journey and my journey. So use I language. This is how I'm feeling. This is what I'm thinking, rather than accusative language. So we had to learn how to be community. And the fourth thing I say is, well, make sure that you actually help give people the respect of hearing different views of how the Bible's interpreted. Particularly in a Baptist context, as a pastor, you are not the gatekeeper. You are the person who's there to help people engage with Scripture, and that means they need to be able to hear diverse interpretations. So I think that for me be sort of some of the key lessons.
Mm, really helpful. How about you, Andrew?
And your first point there was also that posture of having that posture, whatever issue, of being open to that. I can certainly appreciate for a pastor or a leader in the church fears of opening up a topic that is scary and different and has the potential to divide. So I certainly don't want to underestimate that. And so the points, I guess, of Scott was saying, a posture, like whatever topic we might discuss. I mean, we've talked in our church, you know, should Australia Day be on the 26th of January or not? And we can do that without it people beating each other over the head, because we have that posture of listening and acceptance and things like that. So we can use that on a range of topics where we have that open exploring.
So as you practice this process, it's like you're building a muscle which you can then apply to other complex discussions. And surely we need more of that muscle in the world we're living in today.
Yeah, and within that, the listening to the voice. I mean, if we were looking to, say, re-evaluate a ministry to, you know, Indigenous people in Central Australia, or start a new ministry somewhere, one thing would be to listen to what they are saying. What do they have to contribute? What do they have to tell us? And it'd be very sad if we didn't hear the voices of LGBT people in this thing. So the muscle, we use what Scott's largely developed and what we humbly call the Hamilton model of how we approach topics. And this is not meant to be simplistic. I mean, the journey for both our churches and peoples individually is different and complex, but we bring it down to hearing the culture's story. What does the culture say about this topic? You know, in Australia, you could talk about, you know, homosexuality was a criminal offence, and then it was legalised, and then we've had the plebiscite. So we try and look at the story. And when we came to Australia Day, Jono, our youth pastor, ran us through this using the same model that, you know, when you look at the history of Australia Day in Australia, well, you realise actually the date doesn't go back that far. When it hasn't always been celebrated on the 26th of January. There's been different dates. It's only relatively recently in our history that it's become the 26th of January. And so when you just look at that, the story of the culture, oh, okay, well, I thought it was always this, and people are sort of defending something that may not have been there. So we listen to the cultural story, then we listen to your story and my story, and I guess we've shared our stories, and that doesn't really matter whether you're LGBT or heterosexual or whatever. You've got a story of your background. I've got a story. We listen to each other. And like 25 years ago, I took 20 young adults from my previous church away for a weekend, and they wanted to look at the topic of baptism. So the first thing we did was just go around the circle and each shared our story of our history of baptism. Some knew nothing about it. Some had been fully immersed. Some had been baptised as infants, then got baptised again. Some had not been baptised. Two in a group of 20 had the last rites brought in as babies in a Catholic setting because they thought they were going to die, and here they were 25 years later still alive. But you go around the circle and you've got 20 different stories of baptism. You can't get up and say, well, here's the way of doing baptism. So when you hear each other's stories and listen with respect and listen with interest, it just opens up. Then we look at God's story. So we don't neglect the Bible, but we don't jump into Leviticus at step one. We then look at that, and Scott's skills come to the forte there. And then we say, okay, when we've listened to each other's stories, we looked at the cultural story, we've looked at God's stories through a different lens, what then is our new story? Now, two churches might do that and come up with completely different outcomes, but we find that a helpful model of approaching any issue that has respect and listening and these factors that Scott has mentioned.
I think
as the
that's
architect
really
of the model, you might want to add to that, but we found that very helpful.
I think even the element of the cultural story, you know, the evangelical voice props up and says, ah, you're just being influenced by secular culture. But if you were to do that, I even think some of the most conservative Christians on this issue today would still go, well, it was wrong when we used to, you know, criminalize and lock people up for being gay. That was actually wrong. And so the culture, you get into this question of like, okay, well, where are you going to draw the line of where some of that progress was helpful? And, you know, I think it helps people to actually reflect back on.
And debates continue and you can get left behind. So recently in New South Wales, legislation's gone through with assisted dying. So what can happen, a debate can go on for a couple of years and then Christians jump in, but you don't know the background and there's already a lot of assumed knowledge. So going back to square one, saying, look, this is what it is, this is the history, this is what's unfolded. Oh, okay. You're not speaking in ignorance. You have an understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, I often recommend to people David Gushee, his book Changing Our Mind, because he attempts to take pastors as far as they will go while acknowledging that there may be those who don't go, you know, to quite the full inclusive position where he ultimately wants people to end up there. But he's saying, look, even if you can't get here, let's at least go, look, you do want to move beyond saying derogatory phrases from the pulpit and being okay with it, which is where many people have been at. So I think there's something, there's a lot in that. And I love the Hamilton method. I'm going to take it and apply it. I would love to just chat about the two sides here. I know we've sort of partly touched on it, but if we could talk a bit about the pastor who has experienced change and wants to bring their congregation along but is unsure about how to do that. I think the Hamilton method speaks to that. But then also if we could think about the person in the congregation who's like, man, I just don't see the leadership of my church changing, but I want to see change. Is there anything we feel, I guess, let's say there's someone listening who is a pastor. They've got that method, but they're still just feeling that inattention of integrity leads me to go, I need to lead people on a journey, but I'm going to probably lose my job if I bring this up. What else would you say, you know, give them some coaching, help them to work through some of those dynamics at play between the paycheck and the sense of something's happened in my heart, I got to pursue this?
Yeah, that's a really tricky question. I don't know that there is a sort of one-size-fits-all answer. We were both fortunate that we were in churches that had cultivated cultures over a long time of taking a look at all sides of different and rather controversial issues. I think when you come to any issue that is one where there's great social change occurring, whatever you say, whatever you do, you're going to have some people who are just going to arc up. So you have to be prepared to say, if we're going to tackle this issue, these questions, there's a good chance we could have some division, like Andrew shared, the people they lost just after we'd been through this process. And so it's painful and you will lose people. But for us, I think what has, well, I'll just speak for myself, I think what guided me through all that conversation was there's plenty of churches that cater for people who struggle to believe that God is inclusive of people of diverse sexualities and gender identities. There's not many places that are inclusive. Mm. And so it's actually something that in the terms of the kingdom of God, I think was worth the risk. There's no way to go through it without conflict. There's no way to work through these things without potentially losing people and gaining others. But I think that's ultimately part of the role of a pastor and a leader is to say, well, our goal is to help people live in light of who Jesus is in this day and age. And that means having to pick up questions. There's a whole cultural redefinition of sexuality and gender taking place. And I just don't think you can abstract yourself from that conversation. And once you can't decide you can't, well, you're going to upset some people, whatever you do. So you've got to be prepared to have that risk. But I think you've also got to model for yourself a kind of gracious listening and being willing to accept that people have very different views from you.
Mm. I think one of the things that you're sort of pointing out there is that there is no neutral response. Like a lack of response is not neutral. This conversation is happening. This is the moment we're living in. How do we help people to follow Jesus faithfully in this moment? Not talking about it is not actually a neutral engagement.
Mm. Yeah. And we have a great role model in Jesus who was prepared to, I mean, we sanitized, you know, him and our beliefs so much, but he was prepared to cross cultural, religious, ethical barriers to touch the leper, to reach out to the woman caught in adultery. I mean, the story of Jesus is taking great risk. The whole Gentile inclusion, the issue of the day, do we let the Gentiles, okay, we've got this now, the Jews, can we let the Gentiles in? I mean, the Bible's full of stories of people taking risk and going against, the Apostle Paul with his, and Peter, the vision of the sheep. I mean, they've crossed incredible boundaries. So,
circumcision, Sabbath, and food laws. We don't think twice about any of those. To include people that don't think twice about any of those just shows that we have been the recipients of a completely redefined set of boundary markers.
Yeah, I think that's true. The other thing I would say that made it in a sense easier for us was we actually had people, we had gay couples in our congregation. You couldn't avoid the question. They were there on Sundays, you know, hand in hand singing worship songs. So I think in a sense because we had those existing relationships, it meant that people did approach the topic with care and generosity. It wasn't an abstract discussion. It was about real people that we knew and loved and were concerned about. So I do think it can be tough if you're in a congregation where you're not aware of people who are out or and happy for that to be known, because you certainly don't want to out anybody. So I think it can be difficult in those circumstances. And so you probably have to model your strategy to where you estimate your congregations at. You know, maybe it's working this thing through using a similar model to the one we talked about with a group of people who you know are asking those questions already and then building from that. So, yeah, I think you've really got to weigh up your context. But you, like you said, there's no neutrality. To take no position is to take a position.
So probably the most significant learning in my whole Christian ministry time has been being part of and a facilitator of a pastoral retreat group. So the model that we had was, you know, you go away with 7 to 10 people, predominantly pastors, and over 4 or 5 days, each person will get a chance to significantly tear their story of their personal life, their church life, whatever. It was a safe place. There was no judgment. We weren't there to rescue each other, but to be there with each other, to give them a safe, non-judgmental space. And in your interview, Wrestling with a Fellow Dixon, there was a counselling model called
Unconditional Positive Regard.
That term wasn't around, but we employed that. And that taught me so much about, Scott was saying, this open posture, listening, being there with people and helping to empower them to come to what they're going to do next in their circumstance. And I've tried to model that in church. It's not I try and disempower me having to say grace at every function, of me being the person who prays or who fixes your problem or answers your theological questions, that we do this together. Yes, I have at times a role to do some of these things, but we do this together. We do this as a church. And one of the side benefits is that if people pastorally care for me, at times I've been through some deep waters in 20 years of ministry and the church has pastored and cared for me. And following on from that, I was also, or still am technically, a consultant with the Baptist Churches of New South Wales and ACT. And again, when you go into a church to do a consultancy, it doesn't necessarily mean there's a big problem in the church. It could be they could be in between ministers or they want to do a review of where they're up to. You go in and you can't go in with as the solutions person. You need to hear and suspend judgment of what's going on. And I remember one time in a church we interviewed so many individuals, my outsider and I, and each time a new person threw something in, we thought, we've got it now, we understand. And we just have to say, we don't understand. We need to hear a whole lot of voices, put them all together, and then bring some collected wisdom to that. So this topic aside, I guess I've tried to model that at church. I sort of inherited that model when I got to the church. I think it's been enhanced where we can explore things like, we don't even necessarily all have to agree, but we can do it together. We can do it with openness and respect. So it's not just a single topic. It's a posture towards our faith and an open-handed, generous.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And to pick up your question of the person who's sitting in a congregation and they want to start thinking and addressing questions like these, but the church doesn't seem, or pastor's not willing to go there. A couple of reflections I'd have is the first is you really need to weigh up how much this is a sort of core value for you. So in my case, I would not go and join a church that was not inclusive of diverse sexualities and gender identities. Now, I wouldn't go join a church that saw leadership was somehow specially reserved for males. Now those because they're things that for me have become core expressions of how I understand how I live out my faith in a generous and loving way. So some people I know are at that point and they just say, look, I can't, it's just becoming a distressor of their faith to remain where they are, and they have needed to move on. For others, they're still on this journey with other people, and so again, I don't think there's a blanket rule you can put about it. I would hope that people would be able to, that the sense of community and shared faith would be strong enough, you know, to enable you to remain where you are. And I think in that instance, you've just got to keep putting it to whatever your organs of leadership are and however they function, to say, look, this is an issue I really care about, and this is an issue I think we need to work through as a congregation.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And it's possible that you're in that congregation making some assumptions about the leadership not being able to go there, but maybe they're waiting in a sense for somebody to come and knock on the door and bring it up and give them some impetus to go there. So that may still be a difficult thing to do, but I think attempt to initiate the conversation at least, even if you are going to ultimately end up moving on from that space, do what you can to spark up some conversation before you head out the door.
Yes, and have it with the right people. You know, you don't want to just go sowing. Well, for me, I wouldn't want to be in a congregation just sowing seeds of discontent amongst my friends, for example, and others, and then saying, well, I'm out the door now. I'd want to be having those conversations initially with the leaders in my church, as you just said, finding out where they're at, and then from there saying, well, again, what's the dynamics of this congregation? How do they make decisions on what they're going to look at and move forward and operate through those?
Yeah. Yeah, helpful. You could imagine, theoretically, some of these same issues applying to larger organisational structures, denominations, for example, just in a totally hypothetical sense. Do you want to share, I'm being a little bit, you know, being a little bit facetious here, but I actually genuinely care deeply about the process of change at an individual level, at a church level, and then at the level of larger organisations and culture ultimately. And I want to be careful not to do the same thing that I condemn, which is to say that we must reach my desired position, because as soon as you sort of do that, you shortcut the journey of people actually genuinely being able to engage. So I don't want to say, well, if I'm going to be part of this, we must end up here. But I do care about if I've experienced a change that I believe my congregation, you know, has also seen value in, how does that ripple out into the larger organization or structural network, particularly if there are those strong views? I know this is a bit of a live question, but what are some of the dynamics that you think about when you think about beyond just my church, but the broader network or denomination or movement that I find myself in? How should we kind of think about that as we think about these issues?
So without beating around the bush, our church is placed precariously within our denomination at the moment. It's a live issue. And at a special gathering early last year, a decision was made that churches like ours and pastors like Scott and I are probably no longer welcome in our denomination. So that's yet to be worked out how that's done. And while there's no simple method, as we've talked about, and we have talked about the Hamilton model, I certainly think there's a place for listening and hearing stories and taking time. And it's been interesting over COVID that I think as a pastor I felt well-resourced by our denomination through COVID. There's been questions like, you know, what is God saying to us in this season? What are we learning? I think for all of us, church is different coming out of COVID to what it was before, that maybe the length of sermons and how we do things and how people connect with us online now as well. We're going to be different. We are different. And so phrases like, what is God saying to us in this season? There was a seminar run, and I think there's another one coming up about being curious in ministry. I guess I would like to think in my hopeful moments that as a denomination we would ask, what is God saying to us in this season? Because culturally, we are at a stage, this is a big issue. We had the plebiscite and the legislation in 2017 and beyond that same-sex marriage is now legal in our country, whether you agree with that or not. That's what we have. And so I think it'd be good to be curious about that, to be curious about what's happening at Hamilton. And we didn't just wake up one morning and say, hey, we're going to be radical. We're going to snub our noses at God or the denomination, and this is what we're going to do. It's been a careful process. It's been a deliberate and yet a bit of a haphazard process at the same time. And so maybe through this podcast and through Spiritual Misfits, our story will be heard. And I guess I'd like to think that every church is different, every Christian is different, but there might be something in our journey of the time it takes looking at the Bible carefully, listening to the story of LGBT people in particular. I think there's some important things that we've learnt that would translate well to a bigger system. There's still the risk, there's still the fear, there's still the uncertainty. I don't want to downplay that at all, but I would like to think as a movement we can work through it, and we feel in our group and our group of allies that we have of other churches and pastors that we liaise with often online, is we feel that we're more Baptist now than what we were before. We're thoroughly Baptist in the autonomy, like our church has come to this position. We've looked at the scriptures. We've employed freedom of conscience. So we're probably feeling more Baptist in our principles and more committed to Baptist principles than what we have been previously. But it has placed us in a precarious place, and we don't know the outcome of that.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose to that I would add all those principles we've been talking about, how we approach questions with generosity towards others and gracefulness. Now, if you ask people in a denomination whether, you know, I and our church have always done that, they might have different views than I do. But that's certainly what we've aspired to do. I think you have to respect the decision-making processes within your denomination. So Baptists are very different to, say, how and Sydney Anglican Synod would decide these questions. But I suppose for me the thing is if Baptists have gone through a process that I think is genuinely Baptist, we said we want to have our churches have a chance to look at these questions, to consider them, to work through a process in a healthy manner. If we did that and at the end the denomination decided, well, this is something we can't compromise on, and we were asked to walk away, I think I could live with that without too much problem. I'm not sure that process has happened or is happening. And so I feel for me that in the past in my denomination, where we've had really hot button issues, we've always managed to actually take space to explore scripture and to listen to why each other interpret how each other interprets scripture and interprets it differently, and to proceed from there. I don't think we've done that this time.
Mm.
And I think for me that's a tragedy, because there's this whole discussion going on in our society, as we said earlier, about sexuality and gender, that it seems to me we're just shutting down and saying, no, there's no other way of viewing it. For me, that's not the denomination that I have historically, how it's historically operated. But, yeah, I think that's where we're at. And I have great regard for the people in a denomination. Those I disagree with vehemently. There's a whole bunch of people I hold in enormously high regard. So I'm hopeful, but the processes are not looking great. So,
yeah, and I think the larger the scale that you're working on, the more people get involved, obviously the more disagreement is going to exist, and the more potentially that's going to, you're speaking across greater distances. And I think that's one of the things I listened to this story, part of what happened in your local context. I mean, we started by talking about a relationship between two people, and then we talk about these relationships within a local context. I think it's hard. The greater distance that we are speaking across towards each other, the more room there is for misunderstanding, the more we miss those stories. So I think even that, like, the way that a denomination or a movement might change is through people doing that work at a local level and doing that work in their close relationships. So, hey, if you're listening, take the invitation if you can.
And I think our society models for us at times to make a quick decision on an issue, and Q&A, for example, the ABC show, can have your gotcha moments where you sort of set people up and there's a question, and like people are put on under the spotlight in a moment, they have to say, are you for this or are you for that? And I remember years ago, even before this became a hot issue at our level, I asked someone within our denomination whose role was really to resource pastors on ethical issues. I said, can you help suggest some resources to look through this issue of LGBT? And the immediate reply was for or against. No, resources. And with this topic, if somehow we can take away having to make a decision and not be the have that certain answer immediately, I'm for this or I'm against it. No, let's just come with open hands and open minds and be generous and listen. I might end up more strongly convinced of my conservative position at the end of the day, but you've thought about it, you've worked through it, or there might be some change. So I think we're modelled in society, and perhaps even in our system we often have in churches of voting. You know, there's a motion put forward, those for, those against can speak, we're now going to vote. Forces that, and you know, very quick one way or another. I think in issues like this, we need time, we need patience, we need openness.
You know, going back to the plebiscite, like that was a big thing that I remember just feeling so angry about, was we're trying to constrain people into these two boxes. Like there's more than these two boxes. And I think that where we find ourselves in those patterns of trying to reduce a conversation to, well, which of the two boxes are you going to tick? We've already done our communities, our congregations, our denominations a great disservice, because when we come to these issues of complexity that integrate together real humans, real pastoral needs, you know, theological complexity, different hermeneutics, like there's more than two boxes. Yeah. I wonder if you have, we'll come to the end of this in a moment, but a thing I think about sometimes as I think about wanting to be both someone who is a loving presence within any system or organization that I'm in, but that is also trying to be a prophetic presence where needed, to be one who both tries to be peace bringing where that's right, but also disruptive where that's right. Because sometimes, you know, I think Jesus is both. Do you have any thoughts around how somebody can kind of keep the fire in their belly for change without just using that fire to just light up anything that is behind them as they walk forwards?
Oh, I can just only speak for myself, I suppose, how I negotiate that. I think, one, it's always good to remember where I've come from and to remember that the very views I get frustrated with now and think, oh, they're just stubborn and stuck in the mud, I held them once as well. And I only changed because I had a set, you know, the sort of experiences we've talked about here. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, I think we have to try and maintain a generous attitude towards other people. You know, there's a tendency to always want to paint those who think differently to you on an issue that you care passionately about as somehow deficient and you know, poorly motivated or what, you know, to unfairly paint them. I think we tend to sort of paint our opposition in terms of the very worst sort of caricatures we see represented in how their positions put, and we paint our own position in terms of the very best examples of how our positions are put, when the reality is people are complex human beings and there's always a reason people feel and think the way they do. So I think for me, I try to make sure I have regard to that, which means that that helps me actually hold a person in high regard even if I struggle with their views. But the third is, I think for me, again, it came to, I had to realise there's just some things where positions are incompatible, and that's okay. The world's not going to fall apart. In my view, it's not going to fall apart if we hold some different views on things. So part of it has been to recognise, well, let's discuss this, let's have proper procedures, good procedures put in place to do it. But if at the end of the day we strongly disagree, well, we strongly disagree. That's okay.
Mm.
And yeah. So the people who left our church at the moment of merge, in some ways it's probably best for them and best for us that thankfully they and we did that graciously. But at the end of the day, it might be better for them to be where they are and for us to be where we are. Not that we'd ever know what would happen if we could swap those journeys.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. Well, I want to thank you both for your time, really generously having a lengthy conversation, bringing together lots of stories and sharing your hard-earned wisdom. And I'm sure there are some scars along the way, but also, as you've described, the results in your community speak for themselves. They're beautiful and they're signs of what I see, you know, the kingdom of God looking like, people being accepted, belonging, experiencing wholeness, relationship across difference. I'd love to give each of you a chance just to say whatever the last word is that's on your heart as you think about people that might be listening to this conversation that might be at different places on this journey and with these things. I mean, the average listener of this show is probably right on board with Hamilton Baptist Church, but what would be your your encouragement or your final words that you would want to leave kind of ringing in people's ears?
Don't go looking for that paper I wrote in 1996 because it's now hopelessly outdated and there's a whole lot of better resources available, really great resources out to help you.
Which is telling itself, isn't it, that in 25 years we have different viewpoints.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But I just say, you know, live in love. You know, try and live a life where you're maximising the way you sense you're loving God and maximise the way you sense you're loving others and maximise the way you sense you're loving the planet. And my view has always, well, maybe not always been, but in recent years has been, if you're trying to do those three things to the best of your capacity, you're going to be pretty much somewhere on the right track. Ooh.
Thanks, Scott.
You mentioned a moment ago about having a prophetic voice. I don't know if our church does or not, but we didn't go looking for this. We didn't go looking for controversy, but the journey of Scott's church, ironically, to read out a statement from the denomination saying something else, led them on a journey and gay people came to their church and they had to deal with it. Then when the merge came for Hamilton with that non-negotiable that we had to deal with it. So I guess we have dealt with things as they've arisen. We haven't chosen that, just as I'd say that LGBT people haven't chosen their sexual identity. That's who they are. And I'm a bit of a fan of, we've talked about the Hamilton church, we've talked about the Hamilton model. I'm a big fan of Hamilton the musical. I've become a little bit of obsessed with it, and it's a great musical theatre show. I've never seen anything like it, and I've seen a fair bit of musical theatre. So it's the story of America then, when the nation was birthed, told by America now. And if you know the story, it's used with hip-hop. There's black people acting in roles of George Washington and Alexander Hamilton. And
you're telling this to the one person on planet Earth that hasn't heard of it yet? It's become incredibly widespread success.
Yeah, and so Hamilton, the church, maybe it's been thrust upon us all that it's our lot to possibly have a prophetic voice or perhaps we be some sort of pioneers. And I know there's plenty of other people doing the journey as well. And if we need to be creative and innovative and risk-taking in how we tell the story, then we'll do that. We want to be true to our beliefs and our values and who we are.
Awesome. Thank you both so much.
Spiritual Misfits podcast is brought to you by Meeting Ground, a church for the misfits. We know we are only one small and humble faith community, but we're making this work in the hope that we can encourage and empower other people in similar spaces. If you haven't already done so, jump on our website, spiritualmisfits.com.au, and join our mailing list to receive the Sunday message. No spam, no sales, just weekly encouragement around faith from the fringes. If you know someone who would benefit from hearing this episode, please share it and consider giving us a rating and review on your podcast platform or social media of choice. We'll catch you next time. Until then, take care and be kind.